Such tender play, tales of romance. I'm Mardell, reading The Blue Castle by L.M. Montgomery. Chapter 20. When Abel Gay paid Valancy her first month's wages, which he did promptly, in bills reeking with the odor of tobacco and whiskey, Valancy went into Deerwood and spent every cent of it. She got a pretty green crepe dress with a girdle of crimson beads at a bargain sale, a pair of silk stockings to match, and a little crinkled green hat with a crimson rose in it. She even bought a foolish little beribboned and belaced nightgown. She passed the house on Elm Street twice. Valancy never even thought about it as home, but saw no one. No doubt her mother was sitting in the room this lovely June evening playing solitaire and cheating. Valancy knew that Mrs. Frederick always cheated. She never lost a game. Most of the people Valancy met looked at her seriously and passed her with a cool nod. Nobody stopped to speak to her. Valancy put on her green dress when she got home. Then she took it off again. She felt so miserably underdressed in its low neck and short sleeves, and that low crimson girdle around the hips seemed positively indecent. She hung it up in the closet, feeling flatly that she had wasted her money. She would never have the courage to wear that dress. John Foster's arraignment of fear had no power to stiffen her against this. In this one thing, habit and custom were still all-powerful. Yet she sighed as she went down to meet Barney Snaith in her old snuff-brown silk. That green thing had been very becoming. She had seen so much in her one ashamed glance. Above it, her eyes had looked like odd brown jewels, and the girdle had given her flat figure an entirely different appearance. She wished she could have left it on, but there were some things John Foster did not know. Every Sunday evening, Valancy went to the little Free Methodist Church, in a valley on the edge of Up Back, a spireless little gray building among the pines, with a few sunken graves and mossy gravestones in the small, paling-encircled, grass-grown square beside it. She liked the minister who preached there. He was so simple and sincere. An old man who lived in Port Lawrence and came out by the lake in a little disappearing propeller boat to give free service to the people of the small stony farms back of the hills who would otherwise never have heard any gospel message. She liked the simple service and the fervent singing. She liked to sit by the open window and look out into the pine woods. The congregation was always small. The Free Methodists were few in number, poor, and generally illiterate. But Valancy loved those Sunday evenings for the first time in her life. She liked going to church. The rumor reached Deerwood that she had turned Free Methodist and sent Mrs. Frederick to bed for a day. But Valancy had not turned anything. She went to the church because she liked it and because, in some inexplicable way, it did her good. Old Mr. Towers believed exactly what he preached, and somehow it made a tremendous difference. Oddly enough, Roaring Abel disapproved of her going to the Hill Church as strongly as Mrs. Frederick herself could have done. He had no use for Free Methodists. He was a Presbyterian. But Valancy went in spite of him. "We'll hear something worse than that about her soon," Uncle Benjamin predicted gloomily. They did. Valancy could not quite explain, even to herself, just why she wanted to go to that party. It was a dance up back at Chidley Corners, and dances at Chidley Corners were not, as a rule, the sort of assemblies where well-brought-up young ladies were found. Valency knew it was coming off, for Roaring Abel had been engaged as one of the fiddlers. But the idea of going had never occurred to her until Roaring Abel himself broached it at supper. "You come with me to the dance," he ordered. "It'll do you good. Put some color in your face. You look peaked. You want something to liven you up." Valency found herself suddenly wanting to go. She knew nothing at all of what dances at Chidley Corners were apt to be like. Her idea of dances had been fashioned on the correct affairs that went by that name in Deerwood and Port Lawrence. Of course she knew the Corners' dance wouldn't be just like them, much more informal, of course. But so much the more interesting. Well, why shouldn't she go? Sissy was in a week of apparent health and improvement. She wouldn't mind staying alone in the least. She entreated Valency to go if she wanted to. And Valency did want to go. She went to her room to dress. A rage against the snuff brown silk seized her. Wear that? To a party? Never. She pulled her green crepe from its hanger and put it on feverishly. It was nonsense to feel so naked. Just because her neck and arms were bare, that was just her old maidishness. She would not be ridden by it. On went the dress. The slippers. It was the first time she had worn a pretty dress since the organdies of her early teens, and they had never made her look like this. If she only had a necklace or something, she wouldn't feel so bare then. She ran down to the garden. There were clovers there, great crimson things growing in the long grass. Valency gathered handfuls of them and strung them on a cord. Fastened above her neck, they gave her the comfortable sensation of a collar and were oddly becoming. Another circlet of them went round her hair, dressed in the low puffs that became her. Excitement brought those faint pink stains to her face. She flung on her coat and pulled the little twisty hat over her hair. "You look so nice and different, dear," said Sissy, "like a green moonbeam with a gleam of red in it, if there could be such a thing." Valency stooped to kiss her. "I don't feel right about leaving you alone, Sissy." "Oh, I'll be all right. I feel better tonight than I have for a long while. I've been feeling badly to see you sticking here so closely on my account. I hope you'll have a nice time. I never was at a party at the Corners, but I used to go sometimes long ago to dances up back. We always had good times. And you needn't be afraid of Father being drunk tonight. He never drinks when he engages to play for a party. But, well, there may be liquor. What will you do if it gets rough?" "Nobody would molest me." "Not seriously, I suppose. Father would see to that, but it might be noisy and unpleasant." "I won't mind. I'm only going as a looker on. I don't expect to dance. I just want to see what a party up back is like. I've never seen anything except decorous Deerwood." Sissy smiled rather dubiously. She knew much better than Valency what a party up back might be like if there should be liquor. But again, there mightn't be. "I hope you'll enjoy it," she repeated. Valency enjoyed the drive there. They went early, for it was 12 miles to Chidley Corners, and they had to go in Abel's old ragged-top buggy. The road was rough and rocky, like most Muskoka roads, but full of the austere charm of the northern woods. It wound through beautiful purring pines that were ranks of enchantment in the June sunset, and over the curious jade-green rivers of Muskoka, fringed by aspens that were always quivering with some supernal joy. Roaring Abel was excellent company, too. He knew all the stories and legends of the wild, beautiful up back, and he told them to Valency as they drove along. Valency had several fits of inward laughter over what Uncle Benjamin and Aunt Wellington et al. Would feel and think and say if they saw her driving with Roaring Abel in that terrible buggy to a dance at Chidley Corners. At first, the dance was quiet enough. and Valency was amused and entertained. She even danced twice herself with a couple of nice up-back boys who danced beautifully and told her she did too. Another compliment came her way, not a very subtle one perhaps, but Valency had had too few compliments in her life to be over-nice on that point. She overheard two of the up-back young men talking about her and the dark lean-to behind her. "Know who that girl in green is? Nope, guess she's from out front. The port, maybe. Got a stylish look to her. No beaut, but cute-looking, I'll say. Did you ever see such eyes?" The big room was decorated with pine and fir boughs and lighted by Chinese lanterns. The floor was waxed, and Roaring Abel's fiddle, purring under his skilled touch, worked magic. The up-back girls were pretty and prettily dressed. Valency thought it the nicest party she had ever attended. By 11 o'clock she had changed her mind. A new crowd had arrived, a crowd unmistakably drunk. Whiskey began to circulate freely. Very soon almost all the men were partly drunk. Those in the porch and outside around the door began howling, "Come all ye's," and continued to howl them. The room grew noisy and reeking. Quarrels started up here and there. Bad language and obscene songs were heard. The girls swung rudely in the dances, became disheveled and tawdry. Valency, alone in her corner, was feeling disgusted and repentant. Why had she ever come to such a place? Freedom and independence were all very well, but one should not be a little fool. She might have known what it would be like. She might have taken warning from Sissy's guarded sentences. Her head was aching. She was sick of the whole thing. But what could she do? She must stay to the end. Abel could not leave till then. And that would probably not be till 3 or 4 in the morning. The new influx of boys had left the girls far in the minority, and partners were scarce. Valency was pestered with invitations to dance. She refused them all shortly, and some of her refusals were not well taken. There were muttered oaths and sullen looks. Across the room she saw a group of the strangers talking together and glancing meaningly at her. What were they plotting? It was at this moment that she saw Barney Snaith looking in over the heads of the crowd at the doorway. Valency had two distinct convictions. One was that she was quite safe now. The other was that this was why she had wanted to come to the dance. It had been such an absurd hope that she had not recognized it before, but now she knew she had come because of the possibility that Barney might be there too. She thought that perhaps she ought to be ashamed for this, but she wasn't. After her feeling of relief, her next feeling was one of annoyance with Barney for coming there unshaved. Surely he might have enough self-respect to groom himself up decently when he went to a party. There he was, bare-headed, bristly-chinned, in his old trousers and his blue homespun shirt, and not even a coat. Valency could have shaken him in her anger. No wonder people believed everything bad of him. But she was not afraid any longer. One of the whispering group left his comrades and came across the room to her, through the whirling couples that now filled it uncomfortably. He was a tall, broad-shouldered fellow, not ill-dressed or ill-looking, but unmistakably half-drunk. He asked Valency to dance. Valency declined civilly. His face turned livid. He threw his arm about her, pulled her to him. His hot, whiskied breath burned her face. "We won't have fine lady airs here, my girl. If you ain't too good to come here, you ain't too good to dance with us. Me and my pals have been watching you. You've got to give us each a turn and a kiss to boot." Valency tried desperately and vainly to free herself. She was being dragged out into the maze of shouting, stamping, yelling dancers. The next moment, the man who held her went staggering across the room from a neatly planted blow on the jaw, knocking down whirling couples as he went. Valency felt her arm grasped. "This way, quick," said Barney Snaith. He swung her out through an open window behind him, vaulted lightly over the sill, and caught her hand. "Quick, we must run for it. They'll be after us." Valency ran as she had never run before, clinging tight to Barney's hand, wondering why she did not drop dead in such a mad scamper. I suppose she did. What a scandal it would make for her poor people. For the first time, Valency felt a little sorry for them. Also, she felt glad that she had escaped from that horrible row. Also glad that she was holding tight to Barney's hand. Her feelings were badly mixed, and she had never had so many in such a brief time in her life. They finally reached a quiet corner in the pine woods. The pursuit had taken a different direction, and the whoops and yells behind them were growing faint. Valency, out of breath, with a crazily beating heart, collapsed on the trunk of a fallen pine. "Thanks," she gasped.
"What a goose you were to come to such a place," said Barney.
I didn't know it would be like this," protested Valency.
"Well, you should have known, Chidley Corners."
"It was just a name to me."
Valency knew Barney could not realize how ignorant she was of the regions up back. She had lived in Deerwood all her life, and of course he supposed she knew. He didn't know how she had been brought up. There was no use trying to explain.
"When I drifted in at Abel's this evening and Sissy told me you'd come here, I was amazed and downright scared. Sissy told me she was worried about you, but hadn't liked to say anything to dissuade you for fear you'd think she was thinking selfishly about herself. So I came on up here instead of going to Deerwood."
Valency felt a sudden, delightful glow irradiating soul and body under the dark pines. So he had actually come to look after her.
"As soon as they stop hunting for us, we'll sneak around to the Muskoka Road. I left Lady Jane down there. I'll take you home. I suppose you've had enough of your party."
"Quite," said Valency meekly. The first half of the way home, neither of them said anything. It would not have been much use. Lady Jane made so much noise they could not have heard each other. Anyway, Valency did not feel conversationally inclined. She was ashamed of the whole affair, ashamed of her folly in going, ashamed for being found in such a place by Barney Snaith, reputed jailbreaker, infidel, forger, and defaulter. Valency's lips twitched in the darkness as she thought of it, but she was ashamed. And yet, she was enjoying herself, was full of a strange exultation, bumping over that rough road beside Barney Snaith. The big trees shot by them. The tall mullein stood up along the road in stiff, orderly ranks, like companies of soldiers. The thistles looked like drunken fairies or tipsy elves as their car lights passed over them. This was the first time she'd ever been in a car. After all, she liked it. She was not in the least afraid with Barney at the wheel. Her spirits rose rapidly as they tore along. She ceased to feel ashamed. She ceased to feel anything except that she was part of a comet rushing gloriously through the night of space. All at once, just where the pine woods frayed out to the scrub barrens, Lady Jane became quiet. Too quiet. Lady Jane slowed down quietly and stopped. Barney uttered an aghast exclamation, got out, investigated, came apologetically back. "I'm a doddering idiot. Out of gas. I knew it was short when I left home, but I meant to fill up in Deerwood. Then I forgot all about it in my hurry to get to the corners." "What can we do?" asked Valency coolly.
"I don't know. There's no gas nearer than Deerwood, 9 miles away. And I don't dare leave you here alone. There are always tramps on this road. And some of those crazy fools back at the corners may come struggling along presently. There were boys there from the port. As far as I can see, the best thing to do is for us to just sit patiently here until some car comes along and lends us enough gas to get to Roaring Abel's with."
"Well, what's the matter with that?" said Valency.
"We may have to sit here all night," said Barney.
"I don't mind,"
said Valency. Barney gave a short laugh. If you don't, I needn't. I haven't any reputation to lose.
Nor I, said Valency comfortably.
Please join me next time for another romantic chapter of The Blue Castle by L.M. Montgomery, here on Love's Tender Flame. Until then, love deeply and live beautifully.